Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, Kathy Frey here from Motherwise, and welcome to this webinar podcast. Today we're going to be talking about when you are 35, 36 weeks. You are basically only a week or so away from being fully cooked, full term, 37 week onwards gestation. And because remembering that giving birth anywhere between 37 to 42 weeks is completely normal. Before 37 weeks is a preterm labor that gives birth to a premature baby. Or if you get beyond 42 weeks, well, you are post-dates. But yeah, anywhere from 37 to 42, all normal, and you are inches from that. So that's absolutely wonderful. Now, a few things to start to really think about at this stage. Now, one of the first things is fetal movements. And from 36 weeks on, especially, it is really important that you pay good attention to your baby's movements. Now, in the old school version, we used to talk of wanting to have at least 10 movements a day, 10 movements within 24 hours, and people used to take sort of keep kick charts to monitor that. We really don't use that anymore because it's just not a wonderful way to do it. The better way to do it is to just know what is normal for my baby and is my baby not behaving normally, because some babies move heaps and some don't, and it's just how they always are. But it's about knowing your baby. Let's say, for example, you've got a baby who's not a huge mover, but you know, nearly every night at 8 o'clock, there's always this, you know, real little flurry and has a wonderful time and kicking around in there. And quite often after you've eaten and sort of wakes up baby, and it's often a she and she's having a nice little kick around. And that always happens at the same time every night, or maybe when you lie down to go to sleep. It's a very popular time for babies to start to move around. But that changes. Baby's not doing what she's normally doing. That's your red flag. Or if you have a baby that moves untold, like ferociously kicks all day, typically a boy, and like he might still be kicking 12 times in 24 hours, but he usually kicks 50 times in 24 hours. So that's a dramatic change for him. So the other thing is with either of those babies, if they do a crazy intensive, almost panicky, massive flurry of movements, and then it goes really quiet. Any of that's going on, you need to have that baby assessed for how it's doing. What you need to do is contact your midwife or obstetrician, or maybe just go directly to the local birthing suite, and they would put a CTG on, so that's like the cardiotocogram, like little belts that go around your belly, and do a trace or a printout reading of baby's heartbeats. And they want to see that there's really nice variability going on and it's not all flat and of no variability within the heartbeats. Variability of heartbeat rate confirms to us that the central nervous system on the baby is. So we want to see that the heart rate looks good and that there's no decelerations going on. 9 times out of 10 or more, you know, everything looks absolutely fine. But sometimes we do pick up a baby who's actually starting to struggle a bit and probably doesn't really want to go a few more weeks of pregnancy. So you do want to do that. A little good test that you could try at home, it's unofficial, but gosh, midwives have suggested it for donkey's years, is, and this is my advice as well, just to give yourself some reassurance, if you like. Because often women, the reason we don't pick up the movement change is because we're busy all day moving around, and that's actually lulling baby to sleep. So what you can do is have a really big glass of cold water, because cold water in your stomach next to your womb can sometimes wake a baby up a bit. Then I always say, put some loud, nice music on the stereo, because baby's hearing is pretty acute. I mean, it is muffled by the fact that there's layers of muscle and fat and skin between its ears and the outside world, but it can hear. So put on some loud, pleasant music that might wake baby up. then also, you know, you can put your hands on your belly and give it a little bit of a rub. You know, go, hello, are you there? How are you going? You know, do a bit of communicating, basically. And if you've done all that for half an hour and you're just getting absolutely no response, yeah, it's time to have a CTG, okay? But do check in. Don't just take all my guidance as gospel. Make sure that you check with your own maternity healthcare provider and see what they're saying you should do. So that's fetal movements. Next, labor. So when is it time to either phone call contact your self-employed midwife or obstetrician or present at birth and speak, depending on your arrangements? And so generally speaking, with a first baby, once you've had 1 to 2 hours of 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes or over a minute long that you can't talk through, that's then time to make contact or go on in. Because until you're having 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes all over a minute long that you can't talk through, until you're doing that, you aren't actually established officially into active labor. If this is a second baby, then generally speaking, you'd usually make contact when you've had a couple of hours of 2 contractions in 10 minutes or as soon as you're having 3 or 4 contractions in 10 minutes, right? Especially if you're having 4. Get going rapidly because second babies can come quick and third babies can come super quick. Now, it is absolutely normal to have mucousy bloody shows as part of normal labor and it's not an obstetric emergency. Now, mucousy bloody shows, well, they're not all bloody, but they are mucousy because that's what it is. Now, the show is basically the plug that's sort of been in the center of the cervix, and now the cervix is starting to open and that little mucus plug has come out. Sometimes it comes out and one quite obvious looking mucusy, almost like egg white actually, but it kind of can look a bit like a plug covered with egg white mucusy amount. Other times it sort of comes out in little bits and pieces of mucus. And often it is blood stained. So it doesn't mean you're hemorrhaging. It doesn't mean you're bleeding. You're just having a bloody show. Hemorrhaging in labor is pretty obvious. I mean, you have blood dribbling down your legs or worse. And that's rare in spontaneous labor, spontaneous natural labor. Women, very few women just start to hemorrhage. So bloody shows are fine. In fact, get really excited when you have a bloody show because it means your cervix is opening and that's what you want, especially if you're in latent labor because you need your cervix to open to 3, 4, 5 centimeters before you're going to establish into active labor. So you need to have some mucousy bloody shows in latent labor as confirmation, really, that your cervix is opening. Just put a pad on. And just as long as it's little bit, tiny bits coming out, you know, but if you did something like fill a pad with bright red blood, that's not okay. That's hemorrhaging. See the difference? Now, waters breaking. It is absolutely normal for waters to break at any stage. So either at the beginning of, either before you're having contractions, while you're having latent contractions in early labor, while you're having active contractions, while you're pushing the baby out, and occasionally, really, they don't break. And the baby is born in the call, as we call it, like in the whole sack, intact, amazing, very cool, but rare. The fact that your waters have broken is kind of insignificant to what's happening with the progress of your labor, especially if this is a first baby. Don't have to panic. You could still be ages away from having your baby. You know, you could still be 24 hours off having your baby. However, if this is a second or subsequent baby and your waters have broken and you're not currently in strong labor, what I would say is get ready because chances are you're going to be in strong labor quite soon. Not with the first always, but very commonly that waters breaking will put you into labor. So, you know, like get ready for it to be coming on. Make sure you've got your bag sorted, get your partner home so they're ready to take you in, get the babysitting sorted, you know, get all your ducks lined up in a row, because in the next 30 minutes or so, you might be in roaring labor, actually. So water's breaking. Now, if the waters break and they are greeny brown color, so waters usually should be sort of yellowish or clear, or maybe a bit pink if they're a bit blood, slightly bit of show mixed up through there. But if they're greeny browny, that's not normal. That means that baby's had a little poo. It means that those waters are what we call meconium stained. Now, it means that your baby has had a poo and what we don't know is why. So if you are, you know, before 40, 41 weeks and there's some meconium staining, then we really do want to put a CTG on that baby and just make sure baby's happy and not getting a bit stressed at all. So it is a reason to make contact and get debuthing speed and have that checked out. If it's happening after sort of about 40, 41, 42 weeks gestation, good chances are that it's just your baby being mature, post-mature, had a first poo. But we still treat it as if the baby might possibly be stressed. So you still want to get that checked out. Now, one thing, there's a whole lots of different topics, but when you do go into latent labor, so let's say it usually happens in the evening. So let's say the sun's gone down at sort of 6 o'clock or whatever, and by 7:30 you're having some latent contractions. It's clearly not active labor. You're not having 3 or 4 contractions every 10 minutes that are all over a minute long that you can't talk through, but you are having regular contractions. So it's now 10 o'clock at night. They're getting a little bit stronger. What's the one thing that you don't do? Don't phone your midwife or your doula when you've just having some contractions. And the reason I say don't phone, look, check in with them if that's their policy. But the reason I tell you is that if you ring your on-call midwife at 10 o'clock at night and tell her, oh, just to give you the heads up, I'm having some contractions, the one thing that she's going to really struggle to do that night is sleep well, because she knows her phone might go at any time. I mean, she knows her phone could go at any time anyway. But like really now, it's just really hard to sleep. Take it from someone who was on call for a long time. It would be way better, because that might not be the night that you go into labor. Not at all. You still could be 2 days away, 3 days away from having your baby. It's only your first night of latent labor. Latent labor often happens over multiple nights. So what could be way better is to just wait and see what happens. Now, if at 3 o'clock in the morning, yep, those contractions are roaring along, awesome. Ring her, wake her. She's had some sleep. She'll be there and she'll be fine. And she'll be, it's what she's used to doing. Or he, if it's a male midwife, male obstetrician, it's what they do. They know their jobs. But just ringing to give the heads up, there's kind of no point except that you stop them sleeping. Makes sense? Now, in the morning, if you have just had latent labor all night, the same thing would apply. You don't really need to ring them at 7 o'clock in the morning just to let them know, just to let you know that I've had latent labor all night. At the moment, they're 30-second contractions every 6 minutes. Don't ring her at 7 o'clock in the morning to let her know that. When did she just get to bed from the previous labor? You're not sure. She might have just crawled in at 3 o'clock in the morning. She really needs to sleep in. The best thing to do, because she needs that sleep, because she might be catching your baby tonight. So just let them sleep. Contact them after 10 o'clock, because really it's way more interesting to know. After 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, are your contractions still happening, or have they petered off completely? If your contractions have been latent overnight the whole night and then they're still going at lunchtime the next day, that's awesome. You're probably going to have your baby that night. If they have petered off by late morning lunchtime, yeah, just sleep, darling, just sleep. They're probably going to do another night of latent labor. Probably, maybe, sleep. Life of a cat. Okay, what else? Don't text and tell your partner this really strongly, because it tends to be, if you personally are able to contact your midwife to talk about your labor, then chances are you're not actually established into active labor. Most women can't cope with doing that. They need their partner to phone. So your partner needs to phone the midwife. Never text. I would have to say that in all my career as a midwife, one of the most craziest texts I ever got was somebody texting me that the woman needed was feeling like she needed to push. And I knew nothing about the labour. So I'm like, what? What? Anyway, I was a 10-minute drive away and we caught the baby. All good. But yeah, texting is not appropriate with active labour. Definitely requires a phone call. So other things that you want to be just ticking off your list at this time, I'm just looking at my list, just kind of check in with yourself as to where you are on your own kind of a social, emotional area, aspects of childbirth. You know, where are you sitting on that? Are you feeling confident that, you know, you don't know what's ahead of you, but you're not scared or petrified? If you are feeling scared or petrified at this stage, you need to address that. And certainly things like acupuncture and homeopathy can be very helpful. Homeopathy particularly can be very helpful with emotional feelings. You know, you need to check in with that. Perhaps doing a little bit of meditation can be really great. Start to look after yourself, because burying those feelings is not helping, because you do have to have this baby. You know this journey is ahead of you. So just check in with yourself and pay yourself a little bit of attention on that. And the same thing with regards to your postnatal support networks and your sort of feelings of self-care around your postnatal period. You know, have you got your ducks lined up in a row on that one? Have you got a plan in place as to who's going to be there? And have you got some space and time that you can catch your breath and moments to yourself as well? Because you kind of need both. So just sort of check in that you're feeling good about all of that. Make sure that you're feeling good about your parenting skills, particularly that you've learnt about the art of breastfeeding and the science of lactation, and that you've learnt about the art and science of infant sleep. I've got loads of information on my site on both of those. Make sure that you've sorted financial matters. Don't think you've got another 2 or 3 weeks to sort this. Maybe not. You could start contracting tonight. So just have that tidied up. Make sure you've got loads of pre-cooked one dish wonders already frozen in your freezer, ready to pull out for dinners in that first month. You want a freezer full of meals already sorted. What else? Paid parental leave, make sure that's all sorted. Your maternity leave, etc. And this is also a very good time as an opportunity to meet your midwife or obstetrician backup team. If you are dealing with one main person, maybe you don't have that and you're simply dealing with a hospital team, that's fine. You'll just have whoever's on working that shift at that time. But if you've got a private practice of any call, make sure that this is, you know, it's a good time to touch base with the backups, meet them and let them get to know your birth plan and a little bit about you. Just a reminder that it's very likely or very possible that you could ask if a student midwife or a student doctor could be present during part of your labour or particularly at the birth. Now, with regards to student midwives, look, any woman or who is a student midwife, we all have to just adore her, praise her. Oh my God, it's such incredibly difficult degree, which requires incredible amounts of personal sacrifice. Please honour her, woman to woman. It would be absolutely wonderful if you can be as generously allow her to be part, because the more she learns, the more experience she gets, the better she's going to be as a midwife when it's her turn to be in charge of a labour. So you're kind of paying it forward. And one of the most important clinical experiences that she gains as a student midwife, which she cannot do by theory, it has to be done by practical, is internal vaginal examinations. I think it's the most important skill that we have as a midwife practically, because it tells us everything about what's going on with that labour. It confirms. It doesn't just tell us the dilatation of the cervix. It tells us the descent of the baby and the flexion of the baby and the position of the baby. It's just so important. And there's lots of different markers and things that it takes a lot of skill to get good at as a midwife. So if you can be generous and allow that student midwife to learn with your consent, it's a very kind thing to do. With regards to the student doctors, I have certainly told a few of them off a little bit sometimes. Well, just given them a bit of a reality check, because for them, sometimes they don't, may not really have a particular interest going forward in obstetrics or gynecology. It's not really something that they're wanting to head into. They already might know that. But as a student doctor, they need to tick off so many births that they've attended. It's like, you know, how many appendectomies have I attended? How many times have I done this? And it's just ticking it off, and they've got a little workbook that they have to tick it off, and it becomes a bit of a numbers game, and that's not okay when it comes to childbirth. So I always say to them, if a woman allows you to be present in the room during the moment of her baby's birth, that is generous of her, as her allowing you to be present in the moment of that baby's conception. Yeah, right? It's a very sacred moment. So again, it's lovely if you can let them in. They do, you know, and you actually might inspire them into obstetrics. And that has happened. I've seen that happen more than once, student doctors. So it becomes an incredibly amazing experience for them too, potentially. See how you feel, but know that that could be something you need to make a decision on. Know that afterwards, after the baby's born, ideally, so long as that baby does not require any resus, or as soon as the baby's little bit of resus is over, ideally that baby should be naked, skin to skin, on your skin, skin to skin. Not naked baby on nightie, not dressed baby on naked woman, naked, naked, tummy to tummy, okay? But with a hat on. Their heads are enormous in relation to their body. They lose heat very fast, and most of them are pretty bald or they've got short hair. So they do need a hat on. Hat on, lovely heated warm blankets over top of the baby and the baby skin to skin. And preferably they'll stay skin to skin with you for the first hour or two. And then after that, have their way and their examination and their measurements and they get dressed, etc. But during that time is when also the baby will start to lick their chops and be starting to look around, nestling for that boob nipple so that they can start to latch on and have their first feed. So what can be really common is something like this, that, you know, the baby's on the skin to skin, and at about half an hour old, it starts rooting around to have its first breastfeed. It might have 20 or 40 minutes on the first side, then 20 or 40 minutes on the second side. Now the baby's an hour and a half old. It's absolutely content. It's like, oh, purring almost, if the baby could. And that's at the time when we tend to say, okay, baby, you've had your first feed, but we do want to weigh you and measure you and find out a little bit more about you and check that everything else is looking all good. And they have that first neonatal check, and then often mum can sort of feel like she's really ready to actually stand up and have a shower and get cleaned up. And often while she's doing that, the partner is giving her a little bit of helping hand, while maybe the midwife is dressing the baby. And then quite often the mum sort of lies down on the bed afterwards and just does a big whew kind of moment, and daddy might be having some lovely cuddle time with baby. So something like that. Everybody's experience is a bit different, but that sort of could be a pretty common, nice little scenario. The last two things I want to say to you at this gestation is just a reminder that not to be sleeping on your back. You shouldn't have been sleeping on your back really since about 28 weeks, preferably, but it is really important at this time. You've got a big, heavy weight of your baby pressing on your inferior vena cava, which is the big vein that returns blood to your heart. So definitely make sure you've got some pillows down the side of your back, so that even when you're asleep, you don't accidentally roll onto your back. Now, if you do accidentally roll onto your back and you wake up and find that you're on your back, don't panic. I was involved with some very interesting research that it's not completely conclusive, but certainly we could see the research is still being done, but certainly we could see a correlation of women rolling onto their back and them waking up. And it was like their own body's little alarm system going, roll back to your side, roll back to your side. Now, generally speaking, we've always hypothesized that the lying on the left side is better on the right than the right. But to be honest, to the best of my knowledge, we still don't have some really hard evidence on that. So, and you can't always spend the entire time in the one position. So, you know, favor the left, but roll to your right if your body's, you know, needs a change, but just not on your back. And then the only last thing I want to say is enjoy this last few days or weeks or however long you've got. This is the last time in your life, if this is your first baby, that it's just you as a couple or it's just you as a single. From that day onwards, you're going to always have this person that you're emotionally tied to and responsible for, and it's a big deal. So, and I know you know it's a big deal, but don't wish this last time away. Don't be saying things like, oh, I just can't wait to be in labor. I just can't wait for the baby to arrive. Yes, you can. Your baby's going to arrive on exactly the birth date he or she has already chosen. That's what I believe, because I've seen some incredible synchronicities over years of babies arriving at a particular date that has some real significance some way, somewhere else in the family. Maybe it was grandmother's birth date or something like that. And I really do think these babies choose their date of birth. So just let your baby come when it's ready and just enjoy. And don't wish away the last few days or weeks that you have before this baby arrives. So that's everything for today. I hope you enjoy it, and we will talk next time. Bye from Kathy.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.